Session number 11773, R. Langdon Davis, Reel 2.
Mr. Langdon Davis, Reel 2.
As I was saying, that even in the small village of Cam de Bannol, which is up in the Pyrenees, while I was there, six anarchists arrived by car from Barcelona and took somebody that they didn't like from the village and bumped him off and then disappeared again. So that sort of thing was going on, but probably not to the scale that some newspapers would have you think.
But I think you were saying earlier you don't know who this chap was or what his background was.
I didn't know, no. Mind you, I was in some difficulty. I didn't really speak the language. So that although people might have been talking about it, I didn't understand too much.
How did you know about the details of this incident? Presumably you didn't
witness I didn't know. I'm afraid I didn't witness this. I would have been told by my hostess, Signora Casanova, who was... she was a very popular person in that part of the world and very well thought of and really knew everything that was going on.
What else did you see at that time in Barcelona? For example, did you see anything of what might be called workers' control of factories or places of work there?
Well, it's difficult for me to say that I actually saw that. I mean, the only one example that I've already quoted was that the Hotel Ritz had been taken over by the Union. That I saw, and I went there. That was the impression that one got, that was that everything had been taken over by the unions. Yes, but I can't say that I saw evidence with my own eyes. This is just what was being talked about.
How did things generally seem to be functioning?
Surprisingly, I suppose in a way patchy. Some things extraordinarily normal. For example, there was a greyhound racing meeting was being held as if nothing had happened. But on the other hand, there were no... no church services. Transport, I don't remember there being any difficulty in getting trains when we wanted to go back. And trams and taxis and things seemed to be normal.
Were they still having bullfights?
That I wouldn't know. I rather doubt it, because Catalans are very much against bullfighting, and I should think that would be one of the things that they would have stopped in Catalonia, not elsewhere.
What did your father say to you about the situation there? Do you remember?
Well, yes, he was explaining to me, obviously a lot of what I have said is what he had explained to me about the trade unions taking everything over and forming the militia and I think he felt that, everything was... in the first flush of enthusiasm that things would sort themselves out and that they'd gradually get things running in an orderly manner. But I don't think at that time anybody realised that they were in for a three-year, what you might call, conventional war. The newspaper headlines, for example, just said that Franco forces were being defeated on all fronts by our glorious militia, which unfortunately was not entirely true.
How long were you in Barcelona for?
Only a couple of days.
What happened after that?
No, I went back and I must have spent another 10 days or so with back in the Pyrenees. The only thing I recall there which might be of interest is the I think it was some relative of Mrs. Casanova was a socialist trade union person of importance in Ripoll, and they got out their own newspaper, a copy of which I have. And and even sort of shopkeepers, I mean, they were all working, I suppose, with the socialists. You see, what happened was that a lot of people that you might not expect to be particularly left-wing sided with the socialists, joined the socialists, who in Catalonia, we remember, were united with the communists, because that was the best place to be. It didn't mean to say that they were they would have been franquistas if they had a chance. But the enormous growth of the Communist Party, which had a quite disproportionate influence on events later on, was due to this influx of middle-class people who joined it for a safe billet.
That was a passport to safety for them.
That's right.
Did you see any evidence of rivalry between the different political groups?
No, not really. Everybody seemed to be working together. The PUM were rather ridiculed. They wouldn't say anything more than that. I remember on one occasion there was a lot of noise and obviously some sort of demonstration going by. And I think a couple of shots were fired, probably in the air. And somebody asked a passerby what was going on, and his reply was, "Oh, that's just the pim pam poom," as if they were really rather a joke. But this, in these very early days, everybody was doing their best to work together.
Why do you think that the poom should have been ridiculed?
They're a very small outfit. I don't really know. They were of no particular consequence. They only had any strength in, I think, Barcelona, if I remember right. And they were little more than a splinter group of disaffected communists.
So they were left out as some kind of pipsqueak organisation.
That's right.
It must have been completely different, though, in Camp de Vanol from Barcelona, the political atmosphere altogether.
Oh, yes. It was much quieter there, of course. And as I say, although I think we had an anarchist... you see, there are factories there, and there are no doubt factory workers, many of whom would have been immigrants from Andalusia, and many of whom those would have been anarchists or anarcho-syndicalists in the CNT. And I believe that, I'm pretty certain that the chairman of the local committee was an anarchist, as he was in Puigcerdar. The next town down, a place called Beauvais, was socialist dominated. And later in the war, long after this, there was intense rivalry between the two. But not at this stage. Everybody was working together.
Why did you get these geographical variations in political support, do you think?
I think probably because, certainly in the case of Camden Vanel, if there were anarchists there, it would have been because there were factories there, and many of the factory workers would have been immigrants from Andalusia. And some of the companies you see in that part had sort of almost company towns, their own housing up the valleys. And those would almost certainly have been immigrants from the south, rather than Catalans. Whereas a place I mentioned, Belvoir, was just a little agricultural town. As far as I know, there's no industry there. And there would have been few, if any, immigrants. You see, the anarchists were strong originally in Andalusia. The only reason that they were prominent in Barcelona was because of the enormous immigration of people coming from Andalusia looking for work in Barcelona, at such places as the SEAT works, the motor works. And that is still the case, that there are large numbers of Andalusians, but of course a lot of them now have become Catalanized. I think that would account, I think, for the differences between, as you say, the geographical differences in political affiliations, not so much affiliations of sentiment.
What did the Catalan people feel about the southern immigrants?
Oh, well, they were used to them. I mean, this is over a period of years. I'm not talking about that just at this time. This had been going on for many years. And I suppose, like anywhere else, where you have an immigrant population, it tends to move into one particular part of a town. They tend to stick together. And sometimes there is some sort of rivalry between the two groups, but by and large they are now being assimilated.
What effect did the Spanish Civil War have on you yourself politically?
Oh, well, I, not having been particularly interested in politics before, and not knowing much about it, when I returned home to England, I began to take more interest. And at that time, there was a movement in this country towards a popular front, in imitation of France and Spain. And I remember at school, so I went back to school after this trip, selling pamphlets by in support of this popular front, and I remained interested in left-wing politics, I suppose, until the Second World War. Although I rather lost interest when the Spanish Civil War came to such a disastrous end. But when the Second World War started, I abandoned any left-wing views I might have acquired. And joined up.
What was your reaction when you heard the announcement that we were at war with Germany?
It's very difficult to say. I mean, in a way, one had expected it. I suppose a certain amount of apprehension. Very difficult to describe. I can't say. I didn't. I think one had rarely been prepared for it by events that preceded it.
Now, you joined the RAF in 1940. Did you become air crew?
Yes.
When did you first join an operational squadron?
In the summer of 1941. That's right, I was posted to a Defiant squadron at Cullern near Bath, engaged as night fighters at the time.
And so you were trying to intercept the German Air Force raids during the Blitz? Or had it finished by then?
It hadn't finished, but we didn't have a great deal of activity, but during the time that I was with that squadron, and then very shortly afterwards, I think it was decided that Defiance weren't really very efficient as night fighters, and I was posted to a bow fighter squadron.
What problems did you have with the Defiant?
Well, as I recall, they weren't very fast. They were quite nice to fly, but sort of steady and slow and steady, but as I recall, the only armament was this gun turret, which was hydraulically operated, and it kept going wrong.
And the bowfighter, how did you find that in comparison?
I found that almost impossible to fly, having been trained on single-engined aeroplanes. To have to start flying twins with Mark II bowfighters was a fairly alarming experience.
Were people having accidents with them?
Not a great deal, but it's really more rather a miracle that there weren't more accidents, because they had a very violent swing on takeoff and landing, and if they got out of control, then you were in a bad way.
Were they having any successes against the German night bombers?
Oh yes, I was stationed at that time, right down in Cornwall, and we were. Not heavy raids, but there were regular raids and reconnaissance flights by the Germans. There was a flight that we used to call the Milk Train, which came down the tip of Cornwall and the Scilly Isles every morning. And it was those sort of single aircraft that we went endeavoured to shoot down.
What was the morale in the Air Force at that time about the prospects for the country?
Oh, I just think we all assumed that we were going to win one day. The morale was certainly high in the squadron as far as flying is concerned. And it's an extraordinary thing that I don't think we ever thought that we could possibly lose the war. It never entered our heads. We began to think it was taking a hell of a long time to win it.
I think you went out to the Middle East with 6 squadron.
No, I didn't go out with the 6th Squadron. I was still on bow fighters when I went out to the Middle East, and I, in fact, had to fly out in a bow fighter via Gibraltar and Malta. And when I got to Malta, in the height of the Blitz there, they took my bow fighter off me and kept it in Malta, and I had to wait for about 6 weeks, I think, to get a lift on to Egypt, which is where I was supposed to be heading for. And eventually I think I got to Egypt in May 1942.
So you spent 6 weeks in the Malta siege?
Yes.
What was that like?
Most unpleasant.
Because of the bombing or the privations?
Because of the bombing. I mean, we were bombed all the time. Man, you as with all these sort of things, one gets used to them. But there were one or two hairy incidents.
What was this? The Italians or the Germans who were doing
it? Oh, the Germans in the main, yes. And Italians, but I think the Germans were the more dangerous.
What were the tactics of the German Air Force in the bombing?
Well, I think a lot of it were Stukas, dive bombing. And the high-level bombing was done by Italians, but it was the German Stukas, I think, were the ones that caused most trouble.
What kind of targets did they seem to have? Was it purely military, or...?
Well, the aerodrome was bombed all the time, kept under constant attack, and aeroplanes didn't last long if they were in a dispersal base around that aerodrome. This is at Lucca. But they bombed civilian targets as well. We were billeted, I remember, in what had been a workhouse or a leper hospital or something. And they bombed that.
Were you at Lucca a lot of the time?
I was actually stationed at Lucca, yes.
What about the question of food? Was your food adequate there, or did you suffer from the lack of food?
Not at that time. I don't remember suffering from lack of food. It wasn't very exciting. It was probably beef and biscuits. But bully beef can be cooked in quite appetizing ways by good cooks. I have no recollection. I mean, it was just dull. I don't recall that we actually had any shortage of food.
Did you see much of the Maltese civilians and how they were standing up to it?
Yes, of course. Occasionally one moved about and went into air raid shelters full of Maltese civilians. There was a raid on if you were off duty. I think they took it like anybody else would. They were, I mean, everybody gets a bit frightened when you get attacked by Stukas, even if you're in, I mean, these were not deep shelters. There were quite a lot of shelters. But they were not deep shelters, certainly wouldn't have stood anything like a direct hit.
Did the inhabited parts of the island look a mess from the bombing?
Yes, oh yes, the usual holes amongst the buildings that have been hit. But of course in Malta they have this sandstone that you can very quickly rebuild. A building, or certainly single-story buildings seem to shoot up very quickly. There wasn't much protection from bombs.
What about your operations in the Western Desert? Can you say something about that, please?
Well, there's very little to say. To be quite honest, I didn't arrive in the Western Desert until it was virtually all over. having got to Egypt, quite soon after getting there, I was posted back to Hurricanes, or back to single engine and to a Hurricane squadron, and we were patrolling around port side, and very little activity. And then for reasons which I don't entirely understand, I was posted to the Persian Gulf, where we had to defend the oil refineries at Abadan with three Mark I Hurricanes. Fortunately, nobody ever attacked it. And then it wasn't until May 1943 that I came back and got up into the Western Desert proper. But by that time, the fighting had moved on, and we were sort of patrolling the rear, making occasional sorties to, for example, one attack on Cyprus from there. Sorry, not Cyprus, Crete. So that my career as a Hurricane pilot was pretty uneventful. And in common with a number of others, we had an opportunity to be putting in for a posting to 6th Squadron, which had been tank busting in the Western Desert, and they wanted more pilots, and I put in for that, and eventually joined 6th Squadron in the summer of 1943, and they were re-equipping on Hurricane 4s, which had three alternative armaments, either two 40mm Bofors guns or bombs, just ordinary bombs, or rockets. And rockets were something entirely new that nobody had ever heard of before. And eventually that is what the we stuck to. We never used the other armaments, only the rockets. And by that time the war in Africa was over, and it wasn't until the following February that we moved up to Italy, and that from then on really is the only exciting action that I saw.
What did it consist of?
It consisted in the main of attacking shipping up and down the Adriatic. We were stationed first at near Taranto in the heel of Italy, and we moved up later to Foggia and then to a place called Cannae, which is just above the spur of Italy. And we were up and down the Adriatic coast, the Yugoslav an Albanian coast, and we had a detachment on the island of Vis, which was occupied by the Yugoslav partisans, and we used to fly from there right up as far as Rijeka, then known as Fiume, and down as far as the Peloponnese.